So my name is Noah Benedict. I'm a consultant with Catapult Systems as well. And we're going to be talking about virtual machines and websites today. As Randy just gave us an introduction, he talked about infrastructure as a service. He talked about platform as a service. He talked about software as a service. Well, as we look at websites or at virtual machines and websites, virtual machines definitely fall in that infrastructure as a service category, right? They're one of the more recent offerings that Microsoft has put out there. And really, they have brought the Azure product offering sort of full circle. It's really matured with the introduction of virtual machines and with Microsoft fully embracing infrastructure as a service. One of the things that we didn't used to be able to do. My wife is also a software developer. We've kind of a geeky household. But she is a GIS software developer, right? She works primarily in the ESRI product suite. Well, there was no way for her to use Azure in the past because it's these huge installs, right? It's DVD after DVD of stuff that you have to install. There was no way for her to do that. Well, now with infrastructure as a service, with virtual machines out there, she can go out, spin up a machine, do the installation, and she can use this, right? Just like all of us who've been doing more vanilla type of development have been able to do for a while. Another thing that's out there is, you know, they support both Windows and Linux flavors, and we'll talk about some of these later, but you're going to be really surprised at some of the logos that you're going to see on screen sharing space with the Microsoft Windows server. Flexible workloads, right? It's Azure, it's cloud, flexibility is our hallmark, our trademark. I can scale up machines, I can scale down machines, I can shut down machines and not be billed for those. So there's a lot of flexibility there. And right, this is not something new for all of us. We've all been doing this for a while. We're all familiar with the traditional way of, you know, oh, okay, I need a new box, I've got to go do this. So it means I need a box of this kind of spec, it's got to have this sort of hardware or this sort of software installed on it. And I go out and I submit it to IT, and then like 2 weeks later they come back and they give me my box with username and password, has 2/3 of what I needed done on it. Well, what this allows you to do is to create those on your own. But then the difference, of course, is that it's out in the cloud. So now we've got to figure out how do I connect that virtual machine that lives out there in the cloud back with my on-premise SQL Server instance or my on-premise data. Microsoft has provided us with a number of networking tools that we can do that, including a virtual private network connection that allows me to connect both on-prem and cloud resources together. So, the first question, right? We touched on this a little bit. How do I provision this? How do I get one of these things? Well, there's a number of different ways. What we're going to do in this, you're actually going to work on this in the lab. What we're going to do here is we're going to do cloud-first provisioning, right? And that allows me to go out and use the portal that Randy showed us a little bit ago and say, hey, I need a new machine, right? What kind of machine do I need? How big does it need to be? Okay, hit go, and I'm done. 15 minutes later, literally 15 minutes later, I have my virtual machine and I can go remote desktop into that thing. And again, as I think Randy touched on this earlier, but I want to just address it again, there's multiple ways that you can do just about everything in Azure. The Azure team has been fantastic about making sure that I can do all of my management through the portal, that I have various SDKs, so I can pull up Visual Studio or PHP or whatever my preferred flavor of development is and hit those SDKs. And also, underneath all of those is the REST API, right? So I can go out and just, if I really want to, start typing in URLs and access these things through there. So again, we've got multiple ways that I can do that. So the first thing I need to do when I need a new machine is say, well, what kind of machine do I need? Well, I can go out, I can say a Windows Server machine, I can get a Linux machine. We'll talk about some of those flavors in a little bit. In fact, we're going to go through the portal and demonstrate the ones that are available. And then the next piece that I need to say is what size, right? How many cores does this thing have to have? How much memory does it need, right? So I specify all of that, and then I hit go, right? In there's another step where I have to put in my username and password. And just tip for the lab, make sure you write those down or remember them, because there's no way of getting them back if you don't. But I hit go, right? It goes out, it's going to create that instance of the disk, it's going to put it out there in Windows Azure Storage. Again, being Azure, that means that we've got three copies of everything, right? If one goes south, the Windows Azure App Fabric controller is automatically going to throw that one away and make another copy from one of the good ones, so I've got three going on. So we've got all that persistence and high availability and high performance, it's all available to us. So the different applications, again, from the Microsoft side, SQL Server, right? So SQL Server 2008, 2008 R2, 2012. In fact, I worked through the lab the other day with a 2014 preview. So all of those are out there. We can look at those. Plain vanilla Windows Server, right? Again, my wife needs to go through and create a server that's doing all of her GIS-y stuff. Just go ahead and create a basic Windows 2008, 2012 server. SharePoint in the cloud, that's fully supported. Right, BizTalk. People have been talking about BizTalk and what's the future of BizTalk and where is it going and what's happening? Is it being abandoned? No, it's not being abandoned. It's right here, right? The BizTalk development team has gone through and made BizTalk available to us in the cloud. System Center, that's also available to us. Now, these are some logos you're not used to seeing in a Microsoft presentation, right? Microsoft has worked with various vendors to go out and create gold standards for the Linux, for the flavors of Linux that are supported out there. So I can use SUSE, I can use Ubuntu. Again, we'll look at these in more detail in the in a demonstration here in a couple minutes. Virtual machine sizes. You can see a little bit of a shift in thinking here as far as how Microsoft was looking at the virtual sizes, or the sizes of the virtual machines, right? So again, I pick my flavor and then I need to pick my size. Well, you can see where we started with extra small, we moved up to small, medium, extra large, and as we moved up, the number of cores and the number of memory gradually increased. However, at a certain point, that doesn't necessarily map to what we need to do, right? I may not need a whole lot of processing power, but need more memory. So I can choose an A6 where I drop down on the processing, on the number of cores, but I bump up the memory, right? We've also got an A7 that's got a little more of everything. So, and again, with Azure, things are constantly changing. So we'll look at this list today. This may be different in a couple of months when you all get around to doing, you know, to creating another virtual machine. So, virtual machine portability. We're all familiar with the VHD standards, right? Again, in the past, we've gone to our IT organization and we said, I need a new virtual machine, it needs to do blah, 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 blah. Well, under the covers, it's probably using a VHD file, a virtual hard drive file, right? It's kind of a standard. You look at VMware, you look at Hyper-V, you look at, oh, what's the Oracle one, VirtualBox, right? All of those either natively use VHDs or have utilities to import and export to VHD. Microsoft said, hey, this is the standard, we're going to embrace this. So the nice thing is that I can take a virtual machine that's running in my data center, even that's running on my laptop, and I can upload that into the cloud, and it runs just fine. Right? Similarly, I can go through and create my development environment in the cloud. I can pull that down and run it on my laptop. The nice thing as well is if we need to move that to another data center, right, either local hosting to another cloud provider, we can go ahead and do that, right? They move back and forth. It's just a VHD file. It's a standard. It's, you know, everybody understands it. All the virtualization providers use it. Okay? All right, so now I want to talk about virtual machines and cloud services. And I do want to take just a step back and talk about what is a cloud service. And a cloud service is a couple of things. We can talk about management, configuration, security, right? These are all portions of it. We can also just think about it as just a little bit of an organizational thing. So typical diagram here, right? We've got three different web roles, we've got three different worker roles that are available, and in this case, they're organized into two different cloud services. Now that means one thing organizationally, right? I can say, okay, I've got my web cloud service, I've got my worker cloud service. But it also means that because there are firewalls associated with those cloud services, that I need to configure those properly. So in the first lab that you do today, you're going to be going through and creating a virtual machine hosting SQL Server, and then you're going to be creating some worker roles and web roles that are going to be pulling data from that. That means that we have to configure the ports to allow that through. Now, we all are familiar with doing this, right? We're going to go through and allow the SQL Server port to open, but we're going to have to do that twice. And the reason we have to do that twice is because we do it once on the server hosting SQL Server, and we're going to do it once at the cloud service. Right? This again is Microsoft allowing us more sophisticated network topologies so that I can go through, again, this is similar to doing a DMZ, right? We're all used to doing this in the past. You have to do your, you have to configure the individual's firewall on the server, and then you would also configure the firewall in the DMZ. So again, a cloud service is like that. It's just a little broader though. You're gonna see people refer to it both organizationally, security for management. So again, it's just a drawing, a boundary, some lines we put around some of our services together. Again, sometimes it means very specific things and we have to configure firewall type things. Other times it's just organizational. Okay, so I am also pulling up the management portal here. We'll give it just a minute and then we're gonna go through the process of creating a virtual machine. All right, here we go. So you can see that I've got a number of things that are out here. I do have a couple of virtual machines. In this case, I've been doing a data conversion project for a client, and one of the nice things that I've been able to do with a virtual machine is fire that up and connect to their SQL server, run some really long-running scripts, and the nice thing is I get to shut down my laptop, go home, and then I can remote desktop into that machine again from home. So it can be very convenient. Okay, so I want to create new, and create a new virtual machine. And let's take a look at the gallery first. So again, we talked about there being a number of flavors here. So we can see there's the Windows Server 2012 data center, Windows Server 2012 R2 data center. Right, again, these are sort of plain vanilla Windows Server machines. SharePoint is in here. And again, we can see there's a number of flavors of SQL Server, right? So again, 2014, 2012, 2008, those are all in there. And again, for the lab, you can use any of those. I did work through it using the 2014 server and had no problems at all. BizTalk, their Visual Studio environments. So again, if you came today and you have a Macintosh or you don't have your environment set up, one of the ways that we can work through the labs today is to actually create a virtual machine out there using Visual Studio, and then you just remote desktop into that and pretend everything is local. I've done a number of these events now. We've had a number of people that have worked that way, and it's worked very well. Now as we start scrolling down, again, we start seeing some of these more unfamiliar logos. So we've got a Java development machine, various Oracle. I believe the Oracle's pretty new in the last month or two that they've gotten that running and all the licensing worked out. And then as we scroll down again, we see the SUSE and Ubuntu variations of Linux down there. Okay, so lots of different things we can do. In this case, I am just going to go through and create a very simple Windows Server machine. We're going to see that again, I've got some options on the version release date. And I need to give it a machine name. So we'll call this Noah Dallas. Let's see if that one's available. And I'm gonna make a small machine. And again, remember when you do this today that you need to write down your password. All right, so. Hey, I got it back. I fixed it myself that time. Okay. My password's not complex enough for it. Nope. One more time. There we go. Nope, not quite. Okay, that looks better. Now, the next thing that I'm going to do is it's going to ask me whether I want to create a new cloud service. In this case, I'm going to say that's fine. By default, it's going to tell me that the cloud service DNS name is going to be the same as the machine name that I just provided. I've got multiple subscriptions, so I'm going to use my MSDN subscription here. Can go ahead and tell it where I want to locate that virtual machine. We'll do the West US. Automatically create a storage account, and then any availability sets. And we'll talk about availability sets in a minute. In this case, I'm just going to leave that alone. I hit go. If I'm going to open any ports, I can configure that at this point. Right now, we'll just leave it with remote desktop. We're not going to do a whole lot with this machine. And I hit go. Now, again, as Randy showed earlier, it shows that I'm provisioning this. I can look and see what's going on here. So it's creating the virtual machine, setting up that machine. This does take about 15 minutes, so I'm going to go ahead and go back to the presentation. When we come back and look at websites, we'll take a look and see where this machine is. All right. Let's see. Okay, so virtual machine availability, right? We saw that availability set in there. There's a number of concepts that we need to understand. As soon as you talk about how do I get my machine out there, the next question everybody asks is how do I know it's going to be out there when I need it? These are some of the concepts that support that. So the first thing we need to understand are fault and update domains. Fault domains are things that typically fail together. So if you were silly enough to allow me into your data center, and I was to trip over a power cable, or I was to start pushing buttons at the top of a rack, right? I'm liable to bring down a bunch of stuff together. All the machines that are in that rack are all more likely to fail together. That's a fault domain, right? Things that tend to fail together. Update domains. I have just written my million-dollar application. I've deployed it out there. I've got two servers. They're both sitting behind a load balancer, and now it's Patch Tuesday. I'm going to patch both of those at the same time, right? No, I'm not going to do that, right? I'm going to patch one, I'm going to make sure that it's working, and then I'm going to bring the other one down, patch that one, and bring it back up. Okay? So that's what an update domain is, right? We're just going to make sure that within that update domain, something's always working. We're only going to take one thing down at a time. And the nice thing is that the Windows Azure App Fabric controller manages all of this for us. So let's just take a typical example. I've got a web role with multiple instances. I've got worker roles with multiple instances. Again, in Azure, it's not exactly a rack, but we can use the analogy for the purpose of understanding fault domains. So my fault domains are going to equate to each of those quote unquote racks that we have out there, right? So I'm going to set those up. They're the vertical dotted lines here. And that's basically, those are the things that could fail together. Now, when I go through my application, I'm deploying it out to Azure, I can also specify update domains, right? Those are the things that are going to be updated and make sure that some things are still up and available for us, right? I don't want to take all of those down at the same time. So in this case, I've got two fault domains and two update domains, and those are spread across my application. Now, those update domains are honored by the host OS. So again, if you've been working with Azure for a while, you know that behind the scenes, these are all virtual machines, right? And Microsoft is going to go through and patch those as they find issues, as they find fixes, performance enhancements, that sort of stuff. That's going to happen automatically. Essentially, this gives us a way to tell Microsoft, hey, let's do this in an intelligent order that doesn't take down my application. Okay, and the shorthand for this is availability sets. We saw that in a drop-down, right? I can create multiple availability sets, and it's basically that intersection of fault domains and of update domains. Okay, so does that make sense? Right, it's essentially what it does is it allows us to have an end-to-end high availability solution, right, without having, you know, this klutz Noah out there upgrading, downgrading, tripping over wires and doing all this stuff in such a way that I'm going to take down my application. Right, the idea is that even if we're in the middle of doing some OS updates on this part of the application and I go through and virtually trip over a wire in the other part of the application, it's still going to run at the same time. All right. Yes, it is. Yeah, so I'm in my MSDN subscription, and we saw that availability set in the drop down there, right? That's available. The question was, which I should have stated for anybody who couldn't hear, was that's done within a single subscription, and the answer is yes, it is. Okay, so again, typical application, I've got two web roles. They're hitting a SQL server that's mirrored in the background. I can set my availability sets, right? And essentially, the App Fabric, no matter what happens, is going to make sure that those are available. All right. So the next thing we need to talk about as we're doing virtual machines is disks. It's Azure, right, the magic number 3. So as I go ahead and create a disk and mount that to a virtual machine, the App Fabric controller is going to create 3 copies of that. If one of those goes south, it's going to immediately create a third copy, and wire it all back up under the scenes. Unless you're paying really close attention to your logs, you're not even going to see this happen. So it's reliable, it's always on, and then the nice thing is, depending on our data, I can do geo-replication. So I can say, okay, yep, I set up on the west coast of the US, the west coast data center, but you know what, my data, it's really important, so I want it on the east coast too, so I want it over in Asia. That's available to us. But you do have control over that, right? I'm sure some folks here, some folks listening, have compliance issues where data can't leave a particular area, you can't leave the country, that sort of stuff. You have control over that, so you can scale that back if you need to. When you do mount your disks, when we remote desktop into this machine in a little bit, we'll see there's a number of types of disks that are available, right? The first is the good old traditional C drive that we've all been using for decades, right? It's where my OS is installed. Typical, right? We've all seen this. Maps as a standard C drive. There's also the D drive. This is a temporary storage. It's not guaranteed to be there, to always be persistent, right? It's a non-persistent storage. So when I download ISOs that I want to install on a virtual machine, I'll put them on the D drive, right? Doesn't matter if they're not there when I come back next time. If I'm writing out temp files, D drive is fine. However, if I'm storing my very important data, don't use the D drive, right? It's not guaranteed to be there the next time you come back, okay? It is labeled as temporary storage. Then the last kind is any data disks that we go ahead and explicitly mount. As we look at the different, I think one of the columns when we looked at the types of machines, the sizes of machines, is the number of disks that can be associated with them. These are the types of disks that we're talking about, right? You get to define the letter. You get to define how big they are. They can be up to a terabyte in size. And when we come back and talk about the underlying storage mechanisms later, we'll talk about why that is. So, disks and images, right? We are in a development camp, right? We all understand the concept of classes and of instances. That's exactly what we're talking about, right? We've also all been in situations where we are going through and we have our golden development image on a machine, and you get Bob, the new developer who turns up on Monday. Oh yeah, we need a new instance for him, right? And they basically copy that image out, fire it up, make a machine for him, and Bob's good to go, and it's got your, you know, it's got Visual Studio installed, and it's got all of the tools that you like, and customizations, and connections, and all that stuff is ready. That's essentially what we're talking about. So an image is that base OS image, the golden image that you're using to create those instances or those disks for virtual machines. So the process looks like this, right? I can basically go through, and it looks the same whether it's on-prem or in the cloud. I basically go through, I take the copy of that image, right? I move it somewhere else, I point a virtual machine at that, I hit go, and it's going to fire up. Any changes then are going to be persisted to that image, and as I continue working on that image, right, it moves further and further away from that golden base image that I was using. Again, as we talked about earlier, that's portable. So I can take those VHD files, those images, and I can move them from on-prem to the cloud. I can also move them back from cloud to on-prem. So again, we can look at a couple of things when we basically go through and we're looking at moving from on-prem up into the cloud, right? So I'm going to distill that down into a VHD. I can do any sort of, one of the things that you'll have to do is you'll have to sys prep that machine. So essentially, I'm going to be telling it, you know, I'm going to put you to sleep now, but when you wake up, you may be somewhere kind of weird, so don't freak out. There may be different drivers, maybe different hardware, right? So we do that. We go through that sys prep process to make sure that that machine isn't going to freak out when it wakes up in the cloud. Once we get that image out in the cloud, then we create the instance, right? I want a new one of these, and then we fire that up. Again, same type of thing, right? Just the reverse scenario. I've got my golden image in the cloud. I need to back it up and run it in my data center. What do? I grab that VHD. I'm going to do any customizations to that. I'm going to generalize that. Again, run sys prep. Tell it you might wake up somewhere different. Pull that down, and then I can run that wherever I need to. Okay. You can also create a library of images that are available to you. So we looked at one library already, right? The Microsoft provided library. You can add your own to that. So as you go through and you've got your golden development image from the cloud, you can keep that in a library out there. All right, and I know we're a little tight on time, so are there any quick questions on this? What we want to do is, as this goes live and we're live casting, people can be typing in questions. We're going to handle those. We're also going to have a Q&A session for everybody here that's in person once we get done with our presentations. So if we have any quick questions on virtual machines, that's cool. Otherwise, let's hold off for a little bit, and we'll do just a big Q&A session at the end. Okay? Yes, no, maybe. This means we're awake. Yep. Okay, cool. All right, websites. This is, depending on how you look at it, websites are somewhere between platform as a service and software as a service, right? If I look at it as purely hosted IIS, it actually is really starting to look like software as a service, right? So I basically take my code, I host it out there, and it's just done. I don't have to worry about anything other than a username, a login, and how I deploy stuff out there. You can also look at it, because it's IIS, as more of a platform as a service, right? Microsoft is providing my machine, all of the virtualization, all that stack that Randy talked about, and all I'm doing is deploying my code out there. Websites are really, really powerful. Again, they're a little new in the Azure stack, right? Everything's kind of new, but they're a little newer than some of the other technologies. And basically, I can go through and start really simple. We all get 10 free websites that are out there. There, you can code in whatever you want, everything from classic ASP to PHP and FastCGI, right? Any Node.js, all of those are out there that I can use. And I can deploy in seconds. It's really, really easy. In fact, let's go ahead and do that. Let me see if I can fix this again. No, yes, maybe. I got it once, but I'm not doing it again. Okay, I'm gonna let Eric take care of this. And in the meanwhile, over here on my other screen, I'm going to be pulling up Visual Studio, so that is ready. There we go. Okay, now, what I wanna do is I'm gonna start by creating a website. I'm just gonna do a quick create Noah Dallas test. Let's see, that one is available. Again, with a lot of these things, you'll see that they have to be globally unique. So we can see the green check mark there that indicated that it went out and checked and Noah Dallas test is available. Surprisingly, nobody wanted that, I guess. And again, I've got my subscription. We'll use my MSDN subscription. I'm going to create this website. And we'll see that this is going to be very fast, right? It's going to take just a minute or two to create this. In fact, there we go. It is now done and running. Now what I want to do is pull Visual Studio up, which has come up since we got started. And I'm going to click on New Project. And we're going to create a ASP.NET Web Forms application. And sure, Web Application 3 sounds good to me. All right, it's going to take just a minute to create that. And right, we're all familiar with this. We've all been through this process. So what we're going to do is we're just going to go through and make some changes to the site, make sure that we know it's really ours, say hi to everybody in Dallas and everybody that's out there live streaming. And then we're going to upload this into the website that we just created. So while that's creating, we're almost done. Okay, here we go. So I'm going to go ahead, fire this up. It'll take just a minute because it's going to start my local development environment. We're going to see what we've got here. Again, default out of the box. Came onto the wrong screen. Waiting for localhost. Okay, there we go. So, right, we've got my logo here, homepage, blah, 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 out of the box template. So let's delete some of this stuff so that we know that it really is us that's in there, right? Whoops. There we go, we'll delete that. And we'll just kind of, let's delete that one. And then we'll do, hello, Dallas. Hello world. Oops, got an extra W in there, didn't I? All right. Now we can hit go. We should see, it should be faster this time. There we go, we've got our code. Now, I'm going to come back to my website that I created and go into here. And one of the things that that you'll see, this is consistent no matter what you're using, websites, virtual machines, storage, databases, is that you've always got monitoring that's available for that. We'll actually see this spike up a little bit as I deploy the code and hit it for the first time. While I'm in here, though, I want to download this publishing profile. I'm just going to save this thing. And we'll open this. I just lost my screen again. No, yes. There we go. I got it back. I did it this time. Okay. I'm going to open this containing folder, copy this thing onto my desktop so I know where it is, and come back into Visual Studio. And once I'm in Visual Studio, I can right-click on my aptly named Web Application 3 and click Publish. All right. And I'm going to import a publishing profile, browse to that thing, which is on my desktop, right? There we go. Open that up, click OK. And what we see is that essentially that downloaded all of the information that Visual Studio needs from that website to publish that out there. So there's the site name, there's the username, there's a password, destination URL, all that stuff is available. I can validate this connection, again, model that we're all really familiar with. I'm going to click Publish, and that's going to go out there. It'll take just a minute to upload all of these files. It's a little faster if I had just created an empty ASP project and added my own instead of doing this, but it won't take too long here. And we see that it's going to go ahead, pop up that window for us with the NOAA Dallas Azure Websites.net, and we see that we've got Hello Dallas, Hello World. You guys can try this from the audience, right? We have now published our code to a website, right? So not exactly a sophisticated website, but a really sophisticated model for how I'm creating, deploying, and hosting my code. Make sense? Any questions? Okay. All right, so let's come back. Yeah. All the files are copied out there, yes. Yeah, so you have control over that. In fact, let me come back. We're going to talk about deployment in just a minute. All right? Okay. Here we go. Oh, I know what I forgot to do. What's that? I did, yeah. So y'all should be able to see it. But the other thing that I forgot to do was to circle back and talk about the virtual machine that we created. Where did we go? Okay. So I've got the virtual machine. Here's my NOAA Dallas machine. Coming back to that monitoring, we should see some graphs here from when we started that up, some utilization, disks, read, writes, all that sort of good stuff. The important thing, though, is that I can come down here and click on this connect button. And I'm going to open that with remote desktop. And I'm going to get a couple of warnings saying, hey, this is a new machine. Do you want to connect anyway? And then it's going to ask me if I remember my password, and let's hope I do. And, oh, man. Oops. Nope, apparently not. All right, well, we'll just drive here for a minute. Did I do that? Yes, okay. And it's thinking about it. All right, so we're doing that. Oh, I know what I did. I need to use another account. Except it doesn't seem to be responding right now. One more time. No, nothing seems to be responding. Okay, this is not goodness. I don't know why it's not responding. It looks like it's my whole machine. Okay, well, Task Manager's working. Hmm. There you go. Yeah, I must have at least stuff starting to work now. That's a good thing. All right, so let's come back to here and do OK. Try connect one more time. Open with remote desktop connection. Connect. Now it helps if I give it a different account instead of my AD name. So Noah. Oops. One. Okay. Now I get my other warning, and this is good. And just a minute. Yes, so it's just a standard RDP file. And what we can see is that I've now managed to connect into my virtual machine. So that looks good. Let's see if I can, yes. All right, everything seems to have recovered. Okay, so we'll give that just a minute. You know, it does all the standard stuff where it's creating my profile and, you know, everything there. Again, the idea here is that while what we see is not impressive, we all RDP into machines on a regular basis, what's actually going on under the scenes is really impressive. All right, so there we go, a generic Windows Server 2012 machine that we managed to create and connect into in a reasonably short period of time. Okay, so coming back to our websites. All right, we did our demo. There's a number of supported web frameworks. So we talked about ASP, ASP.NET, MVC, all those are available. Also PHP, Node.js, any fast CGI handler we can use. Deployment, right? We had a question about deployment. How do I do this? We've got lots of options. I can do FTP if I really want to. Even I'm not quite that old school, and these guys are giving me grief about being old school earlier. TFS, we can do web deploys, we can do Git, we can do Dropbox. All of these are available for us. There's articles out there that talk about how to configure this for the various things. The web deploy from Visual Studio is obviously very quick and easy. Some of these others take a little more work, but they're, again, none of them are really rocket science to figure out how to deploy from these. Okay, so scaling websites, right? It's the cloud. We need to be able to scale. There's three different tiers of applications that we can use. There's free, shared, and standard. Free is basically the leftovers in the data center, right? Somebody's got a machine that's taking up this much of a machine that's actually this big out in the data center. Well, you get this little extra bit, right? It's free. There's limits on quotas. There's no guarantees on performance. You can move that up to a shared website, right? That means, again, you're starting to share those VMs. It's common hosting. You don't know who you're going to be with. You don't understand what their bandwidth requirements are necessarily or your bandwidth requirements, so you can still be impacted by your neighbors. There's still daily quotas. Beyond that, you can move up to a standard website. This is the model that we would traditionally think of. This is my website. I own it. I now have guarantees on quotas and SLA and that sort of stuff. So again, we can start with shared, right? There's multiple shared instances. I do want to go through, let's see, try this one more time, maybe. All right, anyway, I'm going to go through and we'll see if I can't just look over my shoulder here. Maybe we're going to come here and talk about scaling. Whoops. There we go. Okay. So I'm going to come to my websites. We're going to look at this one that I've got. Now, I should start to see some bumps in my monitoring. Yep, there we go, from when I was just hitting this. The other thing I can do, there we go, is I want to come in here and look at scaling. Right, so it's actually easier to just show how this works than it is to talk about it in PowerPoint. So currently this is a free site. You can see that there's not a whole lot I can do. I can't move my slider to get multiple instances. Really, I'm stuck with where it is. However, I can scale that up to a shared site, and you can see that now I have control over my number of instances that are available. And then the last thing I can do is I can create a standard site. I can host multiple sites up there if I want to, and then I can start seeing these menus that look more familiar to us as far as number of cores, the amount of memory, right? Because that's now my virtual machine that's just hosting my code. So again, very easy to scale these up and back, very easy to deploy things, and very easy to throw out a bunch of websites there and see what sticks. I work with an organization that is involved in political causes. So when a political cause becomes hot, when a politician is running for office, when a politician they don't like is running for office, they're going to go ahead and spin up these websites, right? And they say out of 15 or so sites, out of every 15 sites that they throw out there, really only one is going to catch on. So this is a perfect model for them, right? You throw out all those sites, you hit go, you see what happens. These guys are not doing anything. We're just going to get rid of them or leave them where they are on a small scale. But this guy right here, he's the one who's taking off. I'm going to scale him out to shared. No, he's really taking off. I'm going to scale him out to a standard size, and then I can continue scaling from there. Okay, so does that make sense? Yep. Yeah, question. Yes, that's what I was thinking about. The other thing that we can talk about real quick is the Windows Azure pricing calculator. There we go. For anybody who's not familiar with Azure, this is a great site to play around in. Essentially, what it does is it gives us sliders that allow us to choose what we think we're going to need and get a price for that. It defaulted us to websites here. So let's go to a standard website. Let's do one instance of that, and a small is going to be $74.40 a month, right? So again, we can see what those are going to be. Well worth playing with. The other point I wanted to make, thank you for reminding me, on the virtual machines, is that you'll notice the costs on here are different. So if I look at a plain vanilla Windows virtual machine, let's do a small instance. Is going to be about $67 a month. However, if I look at a plain SQL instance, that's going to be about $100 a month. And the difference is that licensing is included. Okay, so I don't have to have an explicit SQL Server license in order to run SQL Server Virtual Machine out in the cloud. Right, and if you look at BizTalk, it's even a little more than that. Okay, does that make sense? Answer questions? Yep. Yeah, I'm sorry? I don't think there's a SQL Server Express virtual machine that is pre-configured. You could fire up a virtual machine. However, if you're using SQL Server Virtual Express or SQL Server Express in the cloud, I think probably the SQL Azure is going to be a better fit for you than a virtual machine. Okay? And if you've got questions, talk to me later about that. All right? So bandwidth is in there, right? Storage is also, it's not factored in there, I'm sorry. So it's another slider, and I lost my monitor again. But there's another slider about bandwidth up and down and that sort of stuff. Storage also for virtual machines is not included. So, you know, it's easy to create a virtual machine. Oh, don't worry about it, we're good. It's easy to create a virtual machine and then have it, you know, go out for terabytes and terabytes of storage, right? That they can't tell up front how much storage you're going to use. With virtual machines also, when you shut them down, if they say deallocated in parentheses next to them, you're not being charged that hourly compute time, but you're still being charged for storage for that, for the images and the disks for that. Okay? So just a couple things to keep in mind. Also, for those of you who are going to be doing the lab today, don't do an extra small SQL Server. You will spend more time waiting for it to come up and configuring it than you will save for the dollars that you're going to do in the lab. Okay, so do at least a small instance. All right, so diagnostics and monitoring, right? I've got my website out there. How do I know it's still working? How do I know who's seeing it? Well, you do that basically the same way you do any other IIS server. You can look at the HTTP logs. You can look at the error logs. There's portal monitoring. There's the new Relic that Randy showed us earlier that allows us to do some monitoring of that. Again, typical kind of stuff. The only thing you can't do, because this is really Microsoft's machine, is you can't remote desktop into that IIS machine. Okay? All right. The Windows Azure App Gallery, again, Randy gave us sort of a preview of this. Lots of neat things out there. I've used Melissa Data, SendGrid, you know, lots of things that are available to us as far as the Azure tools. And then we've got multiple flavors of websites that we can do. So we've picked a very vanilla instance that's just IIS hosting ASP. But we can do Drupal, we can do all sorts of WordPress, all sorts of other content management systems. Again, I would encourage you to go out there into the portal and click through that gallery and see what is available. All right, talked about that. So again, right, start simple. It's very, very easy for me to go out and create a very simple site. You get the 10 free sites, and then from there you can start scaling those things up. Right, this one took off, this one's working. Scale that out. The others aren't, don't worry about those. You can code pretty much however you want to, right? ASP.NET, MVC, Node.js, PHP, all that's available to us. You can use SQL Azure, you can use SQL on a virtual machine, you can use MySQL. We saw earlier you can use Oracle behind the scenes if that's really what you want to do. And then it's very easy, as we saw, to deploy that code out there. All right. Any other quick questions at this point? All right.